ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय हरे कृष्ण टुडे हियर इन भोपाल एंड टुमारो वी हैव शेड्यूल्ड the next of our regular meetings about our Varnashrama and Gurukul projects. Which, does anyone remember which number meeting is this? This must be number 7 or 8. It's a big task, no doubt, to establish these projects. It requires a lot of planning and making adjustments and so on. One point which I've spoken about repeatedly, particularly in relationship to these projects, and I'll speak on now also, Krishna willing, is the topic of simplicity, simple living and high thinking. Without simplicity, there's no need or no meaning to live on a farm. We see that many farms in the Western world, I'm talking about Kami farms, they have all the facilities of the city in their home, apart from, of course, they don't have a shopping mall close by, but they are everything, a huge car, at least one car, and TV, and all mod cons, as they're called, which is short for modern conveniences. And this is sustained by commercial agriculture, otherwise known as agribusiness. Now, simplicity is often considered the opposite of sophistication. I doubt if there's a word exactly in Hindi for sophistication. It's a whole concept which is linked with the whole cultural milieu of the English language in which it grew and developed. But sophistication gives the idea of culture, fineness. Again, that may be difficult to, in this context, to translate. Whereas simplicity gives the idea of grossness, brutishness. Which is often connected with the farmer's life. The farmer is not a very sophisticated person. Generally, it's considered like that. He's hardworking. It's not that every Shudra is unsophisticated. They may be very sophisticated. Also, artisans who make very beautiful designs in their carpentry. Simplicity in this context means, as Srila Prabhupada often, or at least sometimes said, yavan artha prayojanam, to accept no more than is needed, and to endeavor no more than is needed, which is a Bhagavatam principle. That verse is there, which I'm just, talabhyate upriyadha, what's the verse? Look it up, find it. Does anyone know that verse? Tasyaiva heto prayateto. Prayateto, that gives the idea of endeavor. Prayateto, kovido, a learned person. Tasyaiva heto prayateto kovido, nalabhyate upriyadaha. Nalabhyate? Rangasa upriyadaha. Talabhyate dukavad anyata sukham. Nanyatra sa kalena sarvatra gabhira ranghasa. The same purport is given in another verse in the seventh canto. This verse comes in the first canto. The teachings of Narada to Vyasadeva. And again in the seventh canto, Prahlad teaches this. Sukham Aindriyakam Daitya. It's another one which you'll have to help me with. So he's speaking to the Daityas, the sons of the demons, about Indriya Sukham. Sukham Aindriyakam Daitya. Deha Yogena Dehinam. Yeah, it comes automatically. If you have a body, then you have Indriya. Sensual happiness. It comes automatically. It must be there because the senses interact with the sense objects. And there's going to be some happiness there. Even if you eat worms and maggots, people who are accustomed to eat worms and maggots, and there are such people in the world, such as the Australian Aborigines, which you probably never saw anything like that in Australia. Probably people in Australia, they live their whole life, they never go into the outback and see there are still some Aborigines living like that. They find some worms in the earth and eat them. So they find pleasure in that. I found a whole bunch of worms. Great. And eat them. One godbrother of mine in Bangladesh, Vyapi Prabhu, he told me he was in Africa previously. And they were serving prasadam. And there was one Negro devotee, African devotee, new bhakta, you could say. And one cockroach ran past, and immediately the devotee caught it and put it in his mouth. Said, "You're not supposed to do that." "Oh, sorry, I forgot." That's the standard response to seeing a cockroach. Catch it and eat it. So, anyone here like to try that? Sounds appealing. Anyone? Maybe many people in Africa would, I say cockroach and they start salivating. So for them, they find it happy. That's happiness because they're accustomed to that. As is stated by Kapila Dev, even in hell, people have Indriya Sukha because they become accustomed to it and they think, very nice. And it's a hellish situation to desire to eat cockroaches, but they find it very nice. So, Sukha Mandrakam Daitya. Deha yogena dehinam. Then? I can't hear because someone's cell phone is going off. Saivatra labhyate daivad yata dukam anashnata. I see, I remembered one line myself. So it's the same thing. Automatically you get happiness, just like you get distress automatically. It must come. So simplicity means not to endeavor for increasing one's supposed needs. Stick to one's immediate needs. Simplicity, of course, may be defined in various ways. Living on the farm means simple living, especially the way that Srila Prabhupada wanted his disciples to live. That means as simply as possible, without electricity, immediately makes a massive simplification of one's whole lifestyle. But more than anything, the simplicity that is required is a simplicity of attitude. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that simplicity is Vaishnavism, because the opposite, in this case, the opposite of simplicity, saralata, the opposite of that is kutniti, or kutinati, as it said in Chaitanya Charitamrita, means crooked, deceitful outlook. So simplicity means that one is not cultivating material desires, and therefore it doesn't have the attitude to exploit others or cheat others or show himself to be more than others and all these various attitudes which spring from the attitude of being a worldly enjoyer. There is a general supposition in the United States of America and most of the Western world that you can get anyone to do anything. Everyone has their price, there's a saying. You can get anyone to do anything if you offer them enough money. But for people who are not raised in a consumer culture, who don't have the misconception, who are not raised with the misconception that money buys you stuff which makes you happy. For people who are not raised like that, they don't have that greediness. It's not in their culture. I've given this example many times. A god brother told me he was making an ashram in South India, and he wasn't happy with the rate of progress because he's from America, and nothing's ever quick enough. Must be done. Everything should be done yesterday. He wasn't very satisfied. So he was communicating, or he oversaw the work via a local man who spoke enough English to interact with him, and he dealt with all the workers who were day laborers. And they'd come when they wanted to come. They'd work as long as they wanted to work. And the usual thing, if they're holidays, then they wouldn't come for days on end. And there are many holidays, and so on and so on. So he said to the contractor, well, we'll just pay them more. And tell them we work better, and we work more, and I'll pay you more. I pay them more. He said, no, don't do that. That's the worst thing you could do. But our American friend, my godbrother, wasn't convinced. One day the contractor didn't come, so he communicated somehow, today I'll pay you double, but you work harder. Next day they didn't come at all. He said, what happened? He said to the contractor, why didn't they come? I paid them double, they didn't come. You paid them double, that means they have enough for today and tomorrow, so they won't come. I told you. Similarly, in the ex-communist world, the communist bloc, they called it, what they called Eastern Europe, the USSR and Eastern Europe, people had plenty of money. So people were paid plenty. There's nothing to buy, though. You couldn't buy anything, so there's no meaning to having money. Even if you wanted to get staples of life, I'm not talking about these staples, but basic requirements, you had to queue up in a long line to get it because very limited supply. So people didn't have a greedy attitude because there's no use to be greedy because you couldn't buy anything anyway. Even if there's no point to being greedy because you couldn't accumulate various things. So, simplicity, that kind of culture where people are not interested in accumulating objects for sense gratification or building big houses or building big cars, or having big cars to show themselves to be superior to others. So that kind of consciousness, to be satisfied in Krishna consciousness. And that attitude, that is pretty much synonymous with the whole attitude of vairagya, which I was speaking about yesterday in Hindi, of not being attached, which is, although it doesn't give rise to bhakti in and of itself, but if one doesn't have that, if one is materially attached, then one cannot make any spiritual advancement. Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam tayapahrita chetasam vivasayatmika buddhi samadhana vithyate. There's one shloka I managed to say by myself. One who is overly attached, very strongly attached to material enjoyment, and opulence, collecting things, showing oneself to be collecting so many things. He can never have the consciousness, the fixed consciousness, which is required for spiritual advancement. Now, another meaning of simplicity, it gives the idea of being somewhat stupid or ignorant. And actually, this kind of simplicity could be useful in, or something that we want to cultivate in our communities. I'll explain that, because it shouldn't be taken out of context that we want to make a community of stupid people. But we live in what is sometimes called the information age. There was the industrial age and the atomic age and the this age and that age, and now it's supposed to be the information age, in which you can get all kinds of information just anywhere, anytime. Someone told me this yesterday. I think Radhesh Prabhu told me in Surat recently. Bhakti Charaswami was there. There was a youth group. And he told them all, okay, find this song on your smartphone. He just presumed everyone had a smartphone, which they had. I had to ask Radhesh what a smartphone is. Now I understand. It's difference between a regular phone and a smartphone is you get an internet connection, and you can. So they could just find on the internet the song and sing it. So that's something useful in Krishna consciousness, maybe. Well, yes, that can be used in that way. But the whole idea of having so much information, and one point of living on the farm is not to clutter the brain with all kinds of useless information. I should have written that quote down. Who is that from? One English satirist whose name I don't remember. He talks about ignorant fools with their heads full of rubbish. Saying, you know, so many things. You know, immediately, if there's some terrorist attack in France, then immediately, it's there you are, sitting on your farm in the middle of nowhere, and immediately you get the news. But if you didn't know about it, it wouldn't make any difference to your life whatsoever. Now, in this regard, there's something I remember reading in this book. It's called Freedom at Midnight. It's a very concise and abbreviated history of Indian independence, political independence from Britain. So it obviously it could be a huge book if you go back to the 19th century and all this, but it's just small paperback. It's called Freedom at Midnight because officially India was given freedom at midnight on, what's the date, January 26th, is it? Is that Republic Day, or what day is Independence Day? August the 15th. I see. So, one of the things I remember from that book was there were many anecdotes given, which made the book very interesting. And one of them was that the day after that, that would be August the 16th, is it? 1947, in some village not far from Delhi, one man saw another man in his village tilling the fields. I guess it's the time of year for doing that, wouldn't it be? Rainy season, around Janmashtami time, a little early before. And he said, well, why aren't you celebrating? He said, well, celebrating what? He said, well, the British, they're out. He said, who are the British? He'd never heard of the British. So he didn't need to, because he worked his land. He got his whatever he was cultivating, wheat or rice. Probably went to the temple once a day or whatever. And What did he need to know who the British are for? It didn't make any difference to him. In this regard, dear friend Tejas Prabhu, not Tarun Krishna, as you know the older one, you were there, you saw him. And there are so many Tejases in India. You saw him in South India. So he's told me many times about his experiences in India before he joined ISKCON. That would have been the early to mid-1960s. Before he knew anything about Prabhupada or the Hare Krishna movement. It might have even been before Prabhupada went to America. He was in the American Peace Corps, which means that some American government officials or whatever, they had the idea that, well, we send our troops all over the world, but we could also send young people to do good things apart from shooting people and bombing them and things like that. We could do good in another way by, for instance, teaching this Bob Cohen, who became Brahma Tirtha. He was also part of the Peace Corps. So they go and they teach Indian villagers modern farming techniques so that they can increase their production and things like that. So Tejas Prabhu was given some basic education in Telugu and sent to a tribal area between Vishakhapatnam and Bobili. Is that the name of the place? Bobili? Is it? I can't remember. Some town on the other side of the hills from Vishakhapatnam. Maybe you don't know. I think I know Indian geography better than most Indians. So he was sent there, and just he was alone with no Americans, and he was with them, and he was supposed to. They were tribal people, so he's in an area of tribal villages, but they didn't know that they were tribals, and they didn't know that they were in Andhra Pradesh, and they didn't know that there was a country called India. They knew they were there, and they knew that there were people from down below the hills who sometimes came up. So we're people here, and there are other people. That's all. They didn't know. You may say, well, that's very ignorant, but they didn't need to know. And they had a, even though they were tribals and considered untouchable or very low caste, not even low caste, below caste. But they were, what he informed me, they're very cultured. The women were not dressed fully covered, but men would never look at them. Now, there are different tribals, because in different parts of India, there are some tribals who they don't marry or they steal the someone's wife, and it's all considered okay. If you steal someone's wife, you just have to give them a pig, and that settles up the matter. So, but these were quite cultured in that regard. So, the point that this point of simplicity, knowing what we need to know. Now, for preaching in the modern world, it is advantageous to be well informed about various things. And I've many times given the example of myself once in London, must have been, I guess, probably 1977, before I came to India to stay, where I was speaking with one young man, and he mentioned the name of a certain person. I said, who? And again he said the name, and I said, who? And he said, the Prime Minister of this country. I didn't know the name of the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. And he thought I was stupid, because minimally you should know that. And so many, and if you know many things, that's considered very impressive. Of course, if you don't know Krishna consciousness and the philosophy, it's all a waste of time. But it can be useful for preaching to others. I've personally had this experience many times, meeting different people and being able to talk with them about what they're interested in or what they know about. If you go, for instance, to a Rath Yatra in New York City or London, and then you're on the questions and answers booth, and people are likely to ask you about Christianity, for instance. They may ask you about Buddhism or whatever. So you can always ask, well, what is their philosophy? And then take it from there. But if you know something, I know myself, last time I was in New York at the Rath Yatra, and some people asked me something about Christianity, and I said something about the sin. I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to God but through me. What? This is famously quoted by Christians to show that you have to be a Christian. So someone asked me about this, and then I said something about that. Well, that's in John, and it's not in the Synoptic Gospels, and this and that. And then they asked me some, but they weren't challenging. From that little thing, they thought I was a complete expert on everything about the Bible, because it was something they'd never heard of themselves. So knowledge is required for preaching, and knowledge of Shastra. People may ask you questions about Mahabharata, that's very common. So for preaching, one requires a good education. For farming, it's not required to know so many things. For farming, weaving, cooking. Of course, for farming, you have to know many things about farming, but you don't have to know so many things about so many things. That's why there's a division of society. Brahmins, they learn what they need to learn. Kshatriyas learn what they need to learn. And so they also require a very elaborate education to know how to fight, to use all the weapons and mantras and different military formations. What to speak of administration and politics. So, and they also have to know Shastra, know what is Dharma. So Kshatriyas also require an elaborate education, but not, some of it will overlap with that of the Brahmins, but not in the same depth of academic knowledge as the Brahmins. And Vaishyas, they don't need to be highly educated. They business sense or farming sense, that's all. And Shudra is not required. They just to do what they're doing, that's all. They don't require any big. Now, you may say, well, everyone should know as much as possible, but the point is, Ante Narayana Smritihi. At the end of life, one has to remember Krishna. And not only at the end of life, it should be Ananyas Chintayantam. Throughout life, one should be cultivating remembering Krishna. So, although being well informed and educated can be quite useful, but it also can complicate the mind in such a way that it becomes more difficult to remember Krishna or even to have faith in Krishna, because if one is subjected to so many different ideas, and then you think, well, there's Krishna is just someone, it's a few people, and then so many people are not interested in Krishna. Whereas for people who are very simple, as Srila Prabhupada notes in that in his purport too, Tata Paramahamsanam Muninam Amalatmanam Bhakti Yoga Vidhana Tam Katam Pashema Histriaha. In his purport to this verse, in which Kunti Devi, while offering exquisite prayers to Krishna, or this is one of them, she compares herself and other women to great paramahamsas and munis. How can we, as simple women, remember you, do bhakti to you? And Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that women, because they're very simple by nature, they can take to bhakti or religious processes more easily than those who are very complex in their outlook. Even they may be very learned in Shastra, but they're very complex. They're not likely to get the simple faith that simple people can have. Of course, there's a disadvantage of that also, because they can be easily misled. But if we have the right understanding, simple living and high thinking, it's a very good combination. Not to clutter the brain with so many unnecessary things. And that also helps to live simply, and living simply also helps in having a very simple attitude. Now, the modern world is extraordinarily complex, everything about it. Just to get the chapati on your plate, basic function, eating. To get the chapati on your plate, they have all these hybrid and genetically modified grains, seeds, and they, so much research has gone into different fertilizers, which they put on the fields, and big factories in Gujarat producing fertilizer, and that's brought by truck and then given to wholesalers who give it to retailers, and then the farmers buy it, and then there's a whole government policy of taking the grains in bulk and paying the farmers. There's a whole administrative system for it all, and then you it's ground in a mechanized flour mill, and then again it's put in some packet, and someone else makes the packet. There's another machine and technology for making the packet, and then it's put in the shop. It's advertised on the TV that this is the best atta. Your kids will be all Superman if they eat the chapatis made from this atta. And then it's brought to the home, and then it's put on a plate. And if you tell the story of the steel plate, that's another whole encyclopedia, how they made the steel plate and brought it. Very, very complex. Whereas in traditional life, you keep the seeds from the previous year and sow your own seeds, and you grow them. And then at home, they grind every time fresh. The flavor, you'll never get any such thing coming out of a packet. They grind it fresh every day. Also helps to keep the women very healthy. They don't have to go to the gym. They're doing that. And then they offer it to Krishna and take it. Very simple. But every single thing in the modern age has become very, very complex. And that's falsely considered to be a sign of progress. But even to build a house, you see, you have to go and study, get a degree in architecture, and then there's civic planning, and you have to test the soil. But people used to do it without going to university for years and years. They'd study with their father, it may not be so much theoretical study even. So everything, roti, kapra, makan, and now I got some socks kindly given to me, brought from America with organic cotton. I thought they made by genetic modification, they made an organic cotton sock tree on which the socks grow. Anyone believe that? Maybe, because who knows what these demons are going to come up with next. But I was just reading summary. The cows and bulls are taken over the border to Bangladesh just before Eid, and the 1 lakh in Dhaka city alone slaughtered on Eid day, and then all the hides go back to Calcutta. If you drive on they have the new ring road. It goes through the area, stinks. That's the where they have the tannery. So it's like they'll bring. The British introduced this here in India. They brought the cotton from India to England, processed it in mills and brought it back to India to sell to the people in India, because they cut the thumbs off all the weavers, so they couldn't weave anymore. Unnecessarily complicated. And our minds become very, very complicated. There's a whole big study, a very big thing in the Western culture, psychology. And many people, I probably the majority, whoever can afford it in the Western world, they have their own psychologist. They go for counseling. Everyone needs to be counseled. Of course, that would be there in traditional society also, but no. In traditional society means if someone, counseling means there's regular discussion in the village of Puranas and Mahabharata, and then if someone gets a little bit misbehaved, then they're told you shouldn't do this. But all this idea of trying to adjust you psychologically, how to fit into the world, unnecessarily complex. People's minds have become very complex. We can find the root of this again from that Bhagavad Gita shlok. Bhogaishvari prasaktanam tayaparita chetasa. Oh, the other one, that bahushaka hyanantascha. Vyavasaya. Bahushaka hyanantascha. Unlimited thoughts and ways, and it's very, very complicated. There's vyavasayatmika buddhi, practical, one-pointed intelligence. And the opposite is the mind is here, there, and everywhere, becomes so complex. You want sense gratification, you can't get it. On the one hand, they're promoting lust, lust, lust through every medium possible. And then when someone can't control it and they go and they rape someone or whatever, then they're said to be psychologically maladjusted. The whole society deliberately makes everyone psychologically maladjusted. So what do you expect? The whole basis is the idea of sense gratification. So to live on these farms requires simplicity of outlook, with the understanding that we are here to cultivate Krishna consciousness, to serve Krishna, swakarmana tamabhyacha, worship Krishna by our work. We can much more easily connect our work in our own minds. We can connect it to Krishna if we are, for instance, producing vegetables and we offer it to Krishna. We make dhotis from the handloom. We offer it to Krishna. It's much more easy to connect than if you're working in some government office or some factory. And how do you connect it to Krishna? It's much more difficult to do so. You can directly offer the fruit to Krishna. So that's one aspect. And the other aspect is that we're here to cultivate Krishna consciousness, and everyone is there with the same outlook. And understanding that we came here to reject the city life or the materialistic life, which is pretty much completely in the Indian villages also. It's the same outlook in the Indian villages nowadays. That money, we have to get money. Srila Prabhupada criticized this when he went to Sanand in Gujarat. He told the people, why are you growing tobacco? Why are you growing cash crops? You can produce your own food. In Mauritius, he told them also, you're producing sugar cane that gets exported to Europe, and then you buy vegetables. It's ridiculous. They're importing vegetables. And you'll see in the Indian villages now, I have seen, people come on motorbikes selling vegetables in the villages. Because people are only growing cash crops. They don't grow, even if they're growing cash crops, they could keep a little space for growing their own vegetables. But they don't even think to do it. It's probably cheaper to buy from outside. Probably. Who knows? It's extra effort to grow some vegetables. But you want to watch TV? So you can pay a little extra and save time for watching TV. Srila Prabhupada's idea was, grow your own food and save time for chanting Hare Krishna. And their idea is, don't grow food, and then you can save time for watching TV. So that whole attitude has seeped into our consciousness, and it's everywhere at every moment. There, statistics are made. I used to hear when I was a kid that by an American child by the age of 10, they've seen 20,000 murders on TV. I mean, drama murders, and you just grow up with that, growing up with the idea, everything, everyone, everywhere, with the idea that we have to get money and we have to get ahead, and violence is a normal part of life, and very, very complex way of thinking, which leads to a very, very complex way of life. So there's a saying that, because our devotees are going to the farms with the idea, we're finished with that, had enough of that. We don't want to be part of this horrible, exploitive civilization. We want to live for Krishna. We want to go back to Godhead. We want to make a better future for our children. So with this attitude, going to the farm, but as the saying goes, you can take the man from the city, but it's more difficult to take. You cannot take the city out of the man. So there are many attitudes which we've imbibed over all these years, just mechanistic way of viewing the world. Mechanistic way of viewing the world is that we always think in terms of cause and effect. That is the modern atheistic educational system, which the science means to find out the cause and effect, whereas the devotee sees Krishna in everything. If Krishna wants, then there will be good crops, rain, everything's in Krishna's hands. And faith in Krishna, Krishna will provide. Or if he doesn't send, that's his wish also. Be satisfied to live with whatever we have. There's a word which was coined by some kami. I mean, even many kamis, non-devotees in the Western world have seen that our whole society is insane, trying to pursue happiness by increasing more and more the commodities that we can purchase. I think probably there's a higher percentage of non-devotees in the West who are perceptive of this than our devotees, because our devotees, it seems that in the 1970s they had this idea, okay, leave this whole society and become Krishna conscious, but then they again reverted, and it seems to me that our devotees overall are more materialistic than the average person, in the sense of wanting to get money, career, get their kids a so-called good job. That's my vision. What do you think, Bharat? You're in Australia. Is it like that there? All the devotees are Indians anyway, and they're all very materialistic, as well as being pious. Isn't it? But you know, from being there, so many people are interested in, at least, they have the idea of simple living, and they know that this whole society just buying more and more things, it's not the way society should be. So there's actually some Australians, they wrote a book about the disease called affluenza. You've all heard of that, affluenza. All the doctors, they know influenza. Influenza is usually called flu for short. So you've all heard of that, flu. I think that comes in Hindi, you say flu. which means just some ordinary, some jor, buka, you say like that. So some flu is it's a generic term for various kinds of fevers which come and go. They're not very serious, but they're unpleasant. So the word is influenza. Flu is short for influenza. So they coined this term affluenza. Means the disease, the fever of wanting affluence. Affluence means to have lots of junk. Big house, big car, expensive clothes. To be affluent means to be wealthy and to show it off. So they termed that as affluenza. And the idea that we have to have more and more and more. This is required in the consumer economy. You have to get people to buy more and more things, produce more and more things. The economy has to grow all the time, which means you have to get people to work hard to buy all kinds of things. You have to make advertisements to convince people that they can't be happy without Nirma soap or Surf soap or Sabina. That's the name of one soap, Sabina. You told me that. Is it? Dishwasher. Okay. You have to have the soap. Soap. You can't be happy without it. You cannot be a proper mother. You're not looking after your children properly unless you give them Horlicks. This kind of psychological pressure is there. You must give your children this. And they advertise Britannica biscuits for better brain. It's junk food. But they advertise it, you have to give it to your children. It's just some maida and sugar and some chemicals. Complete junk food. But they advertise, oh, it's good for the brain of your children. Not at all good for anything. Don't give it, I mean, apart from the fact that it's cooked by non-devotees, it's absolutely rubbish food. But they're giving that, oh, I have to give it to my children. Otherwise, they won't do so well at school, and I have to feed them with Horlicks and Britannica biscuits and this fever of, you know, my children, they have to go to, oh, you see, now all the children started to go to school on mopeds, so my child has to have a moped also. They just can't walk to school, so they have to buy a moped, take a loan, and then the kids start to go to school on scooters, as you see in Gujarat, 12-year-olds driving scooters, very common, going to school. So, and this whole idea, you can't be less than the others. You take a loan, you get into debts, you then anxieties, overwork. Not only do you have to buy things, you have to show people that you bought them. It has to be seen. So when you buy a huge TV screen, you have to invite your neighbors. Oh, why don't you just come in and, oh yeah, it's my new TV. They have to see that you have a huge TV. And then the kids from next door come in your house and they say, oh, next door they have a huge, oh, then we have to have also. And like this, it produces so much anxiety. And then people, they'll take drugs or they'll get angry. Then they have anger disorder. Then you have to go to the psychologist to take psychological treatment for anger management. And it goes on, and they have to go for personality training to show yourself to be a nice person so you can exploit others. Whereas inside, you're seething with discontent, but you have to show that you're very nice. And then people, you know, they get addicted to psychotropic drugs, alcohol, prostitution, pornography, gambling, shopping. Shopping addiction, because you can go with a credit card, you don't have to have money. And the people just go shopping and just buy all kinds of things, and it makes them feel good. It gives them some euphoria for a short time, and then they realize, I just increased my debt. When this Twin Towers, 9/11, September the 11th, 2001, when the Twin Towers came crashing down, George Bush's advice to the nation, how to deal with it, go shopping or something. That was his advice, just to forget the trauma. He suggested everyone go shopping, because you can just forget. It gives shopping. You're in the store and there are so many things for your sense gratification, and you're and you just forget everything. And I'll take this one, and you own it, and you stick it in your trolley, and then you go, and you, now I acquired all these things, and it makes you feel great. It becomes addictive and doesn't produce any happiness, and then people get more disturbed, and it's a cycle, and it goes on and on and on. And then there are all kinds of, then there's divorce and child abuse and all kinds of, people are completely mad. This modern civilization literally makes people insane. And if there is the alternative to live simply, practically it's insane not to take to it. And many non-devotees, there are many communities coming up in the Western world in which people are cutting out of the consumer society and jointly living together simply. They may not go as far, I don't think any of them go as far as having no electricity, but they have alternative forms of energy, and mostly they're meat eaters and they take alcohol, but they'll keep their own chickens and make their own wine or whatever. But back to basics, living very simple. They've understood this principle, not to be part of this insane society. Another god brother told me how in I believe it was in northern Sweden, just when the computer age came up, when it became common for people to have computers, it became a normal part of life, that one mayor in a town in North Sweden, he made this scheme that, okay, we can put in it's a small town, 1,000 or 2,000 people. You would, in India, you'd call that a village. So they put in all the names of the people and all the things you can do. So someone's a plumber, or plumber, as it's called in Indian English. Someone's an electrician. Someone grows vegetables in their greenhouse, and so on. So you link everyone together, and then they can all do different jobs for each other, and we hardly need any money, because everyone just cooperates, and we just work out how much. Okay, the plumber did this much, and he may not even have to get something back from the person he did it. They have it's without using money. They have community service like this. Immediately from the capital, Stockholm, people came up and said, stop this immediately. You're not allowed to do this. You have to use money and pay taxes. It was a criminal activity to organize working cooperatively without using money or minimizing the use of money. So that may come also. The money-based society, they want people to have money and use money. Radhananda, some of you know from Gujarat, but he's been in America for quite some years. So when he was giving his CV, curricula vitae or something, what do you call that? Biodata or something like that? Resume, that's another. Resume it would be, actually. It's a French word. So this is a few years ago. So he said debt status. That was one of the things. No debt. That was considered very bad. no debt. He's not a good American, not a proper citizen. Every citizen should have debt. That was the idea. They should be a debt slave. If you're not making debt, then you're not doing your duty to buy all kinds of nonsense which you don't need to keep the economy rolling on. So it's anti-social not to have, I mean, no one said this, but these are the ideas. Everyone should be in debt. And then you become a debt slave. So this whole idea of living simply, the idea is given that it's very foolish and ignorant and backward. How can you live like that? Well, as George Harrison wrote in the introduction to the Krishna book, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. Phalena parichayate. We have to show the world how people can live very simply and happily by live on the lap of nature and chant Hare Krishna. And that has to be genuine. It's not that, oh, someone's coming from outside. Okay, everyone remember to smile. Stop fighting and smile. It's not like that. And you can't fake it. As I wrote in the Brahmachari book, you can't fake being happy. But if you're actually happy in Krishna consciousness, that will be obvious. It's self-manifest. And actually, devotees do become happy. Why are devotees going and living there on these projects? They're actually becoming happy because they have time for Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness makes us happy. So they have three times a day, the devotees come together for sadhana, satsang, Krishna consciousness, and they become happy. And they're not cultivating desires. Now I have to make my child into an engineer or a doctor. The first, main thing should be a brain surgeon. If not a brain surgeon, then just any surgeon. If not a surgeon, then at least a GP. Do you use that word here in India? GP? General practitioner, ordinary doctor. If not a GP, then maybe a dentist or Ayurvedic doctor, or an engineer, or something. It should be something prestigious. But devotees want to see that their children are happy in Krishna consciousness. They're not concerned that they're going to be a big politician or businessman or engineer or doctor. They want to see that they're practicing Krishna consciousness and living happily. I'll finish there. I'll continue tomorrow, Krishna willing. Hare Krishna. Said all these things many times before. They should be said many times. We have to say again and again and again basic things so that we can gradually absorb it and make it atmasat, make it part of our very being. Hare Krishna. We have a question.
Many times you say in your lectures that in front of the deities or the temple curtains are open, you should not pull up
senses. Okay, I've answered this question many times also. I'm offering obeisance to the guru, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So ask someone else. I've answered it many times. It's a FAQ. Okay. All right, but it's quite possibly something I'm going to speak about, plan to speak. What's the question?
If someone is
I can't understand what you said.
Someone is blessed with, say, 1 crore rupees from last hour.
Someone is blessed with 1 crore of rupees from the past. Yeah, within 2 years, 1 crore of rupees will be enough to buy you a Gujarati thali in their dhaba. That's the way it is. Things are incredibly expensive, aren't they? Amazingly. How much is your train ticket? You came from where? Baroda? Baroda to Bhopal? $350. This is a theoretical case. If you find such a person, we'll discuss their particular situation, depending on their situation, their mentality, and so many other things. Often devotees ask, well, if a person's in such and such a situation, what should they... You have to see individually each person. It's not a rule that everyone has to go and live on the land. It's maybe not even desirable that everyone does. Hare Krishna. Finishing now.